17. So far as the superstitions of the logicians are concerned, I will never tire of emphasizing over and over again a small brief fact which these superstitious types are unhappy to concede, namely that a thought comes when it wants to and not when I want it, so that it's a falsification of the facts to say that the subject I is the condition of the predicate think. It thinks, but that this it is precisely that old, celebrated I, is, to put it mildly, only an assumption, an assertion, in no way an immediate certainty. After all, we've already done too much with this it thinks. This it already contains an interpretation of the event, and is not part of the process itself. Following grammatical habits, we conclude here as follows. Thinking is an activity. To every activity belongs someone who does the action. Therefore, with something close to this same pattern, the older atomists, in addition to the force which created effects, also look for that clump of matter where the force was located, out of which it worked, the atom. Stronger heads finally learned how to cope without this remnant of earth. And perhaps one day people, including even the logicians, will also grow accustomed to cope without that little it, to which the good old I has reduced itself. 18. It's true that the fact that a theory can be disproved is not the least of its charms. That's precisely what attracts finer minds to it. Apparently, the theory of free will, which has been refuted hundreds of times, owes its continuing life to this very charm alone. Someone or other comes along, again and again, who feels he's strong enough to refute it. 19. Philosophers habitually speak of the will as if it was the best-known thing in the world. Indeed, Schopenhauer let it be known that the will was the only thing really known to us, totally known, understood without anything taken away or added. But still, it always seems to me that Schopenhauer, in this case, has also only done precisely what philosophers customarily do. He's taken over and exaggerated a popular opinion. Willing seems to me, above all, something complicated, something which is unified only in the word. And popular opinion simply inheres in this one word, which has overmastered the caution of philosophers, which is always inadequate. So if we are for once more careful, if we are unphilosophical, then let's say firstly that in every act of willing there is a multiplicity of feelings, namely, the feeling of the condition away from which, a feeling of the condition towards which, the feeling of this away and towards themselves, then again an accompanying muscular feeling which comes into play through some kind of habit, without our putting our arms and legs into motion as soon as we will something. Secondly, just as we acknowledge feelings, indeed many different feelings, as ingredients of willing, so we should also acknowledge thinking. In every act of will there is a commanding thought, and people should not believe that this thought can be separated from the will, as if then the will was something left over. Thirdly, the will is not only a complex of feelings and thinking, but above all an effect, and indeed an effect of the commander. What is called freedom of the will is essentially the feeling of superiority with respect to the one who has to obey. I am free, he must obey. This awareness inheres in every will, as does that tense attentiveness, that direct gaze fixed exclusively on one thing, that unconditional value judgment, do this now, nothing else needs to be done, that inner certainty about the fact that obedience will take place, and everything else that accompanies the condition of the one issuing commands. A man who wills gives orders to something in himself which obeys, or which he thinks obeys. But now observe what is the strangest thing about willing, about this many-faceted thing for which the people have only a single word. Insofar as we are in a given case the one ordering and the one obeying, both at the same time, and as the one obeying we know the feelings of compulsion, of pushing and pressing, resistance and movement, which habitually start right after the act of will, and insofar as we, by contrast, have the habit of disregarding this duality and deceiving ourselves, thanks to the synthetic idea of I, a whole series of mistaken conclusions and, consequently, false evaluations of the will have attached themselves to the act of willing, in such a way that the person doing the willing believes in good faith that willing is sufficient for action. Because in the vast majority of cases a person only wills something where he may expect his command to take effect in obedience and thus in action, what is apparent has translated itself into a feeling, as if there might be some necessary effect. In short, the one who is doing the willing believes, with a reasonable degree of certainty, that will and action are somehow one thing. He ascribes his success, the carrying out of the will, to the will itself, and in the process enjoys an increase in that feeling of power which all success brings with it. Freedom of the will. That's the word for that multifaceted condition of enjoyment in the person willing, who commands and at the same time identifies himself with what is carrying out the order. As such, he enjoys the triumph over things which resist him, but in himself is of the opinion that it is his will by itself which really overcomes this resistance. The person doing the willing thus acquires the joyful feelings of the successful implements carrying out the order, the serviceable underwills or undersouls, for our body is merely a social construct of many souls, in addition to his joyful feeling as the one who commands. L'effet, c'est moi. The effect is I. What happens here is what happens in every well-constructed and happy commonality. The ruling class identifies itself with the successes of the community. All willing is simply a matter of giving orders and obeying, on the basis, as mentioned, of a social construct of many souls. For this reason, a philosopher should arrogate to himself the right to include willing as such within the field of morality. Morality, that is, understood as a doctrine of the power relationships under which the phenomenon living arises.